Is the NFT bull cycle back? In the last week, we've seen multiple NFT projects have big rips and big rises. And in today's episode, we're going to dive into some of these and tell you if there is a bull cycle coming in the NFT market or not, what you should be paying attention to. GM, welcome to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. We make sense of an on-chain world in constant transformation. I'm Jay Bird, joined by my co-host, Kyle Reedhead, and we believe that permissionless tech is going to change the world. That's why we're carving a path for doers to confidently build and invest in Web3.
Speaking of NFTs, what is going on with Yuga Labs, Jay? I think we're going to have to dive deep into that. There's so much. New CEO or old CEO, I guess, and just so much happening. They've acquired Moonbirds and Proof. And so we're going to talk about that. That's obviously a really big deal. Maybe these are signs of the bull market coming back. We're going to talk about that and what Yuga's up to. I can tell you what Coinbase is up to. Just crushing it. Their earnings came out last week and they were really good. Dynamite. We're going to cover some of that there. We'll obviously dive into the NFT bull market, as I said. Bunch of airdrop stuff with OP, with Eigenlayer points. What's going on with those? Starknet is live and it's one of the biggest L2s in the world right now. So we're going to cover what's going on in that and so much more. It's a big episode today, Jay.
It is very exciting. Exciting times. We're gearing up to ETH Denver next week. People are getting, you know, the energy's coming into the space and there's going to be some big announcements, but this week also has lots happening. Before we jump in, as always, if you want to do us a favor, please, please, please give a like on whatever platform you're listening on, or if you want to give us a follow or a review, that would be even extra special. A deep bow to all of you. We're so grateful for all your support and we couldn't do this without you. Now, as we always like to do, let's jump in to the market watch for the week. Kai, what is going on in the markets? Let's start with Bitcoin.
Not much is going on with Bitcoin, actually. It is up 0.8% on the day, but it is down 0.7% on the week. So it is just a bunch of up and down and basically nothing. So not much going on in the world of Bitcoin in the last week.
All right. That's steady as she goes. What about Ethereum?
Ethereum is continuing to see some strength, which was, I mean, we predicted this and we've been saying this for a while. Once that Bitcoin ETF gets approved, we think the first quarter is going to be really strong for Ethereum. It is up 2.4% on the day, up 5.6% in the last 7 days. So it continues to have a steady incline over the last week. It has tapped and reached 3K a few times over the last couple of days, which is quite exciting, but it keeps getting rejected. We'll see if it can, you know, hang above it and break through it.
And how about Solana?
Solana is not doing as well, but sitting at $104 currently, up 0.7% on the day and down 7.5% on the week. I think Ethereum is beginning to steal a little bit of Solana's thunder. Look, Solana's still going to do really well, but Ethereum is sitting at center stage right now.
And what about the total crypto market cap?
Yeah, finally, we have the total crypto market cap, which is still sitting under $2 trillion, but it's close. It is currently at $1.91 trillion in terms of its market cap. And again, not moving much over the last week, just sort of chilling out. It is down 0.2% in the last 24 hours. So really not much happening in the crypto world, some ups and some downs. But mainly, Ethereum is the one stealing the show at the moment.
Just love to see that. What are you watching this week, Kai, when we have a flat week like this? What's catching your attention?
Yeah, so the big thing right now is just continuing to see flows in the, let's call it the TradFi world. So if we look at the digital asset investment products, which are basically inflows going into things like ETFs and that, over the last week, we saw a total of $2.45 billion of inflows and year-to-date, $5.2 billion, which is, we've had our biggest week we've had in the last, I don't know how many years. I can't even see back to like 2021. 2022 days. So could be the biggest. I'm not quite sure. We can't see farther back than that, just 2023 and 2024 in terms of these CoinShares stats, but massive week and overall really, really big for the start of this year. So the flows are definitely a big deal. And I think that's obviously what's driven prices up so far in January, early February. So like things look good in that sense. Of course, we have the Ethereum ETF coming and all the bullish news we've talked about tons of times. And so like, I think overall good things we're seeing for flows coming into the crypto world. What's a little bit scary at the moment, what I've been kind of keeping my eye on, is the leverage in the market. So in basically any market, this isn't specific to crypto, but it does definitely happen probably more in crypto than anything else. as you get further into a cycle, let's call it a bull cycle, you get more and more leverage. People get greedy and they start taking out leverage. And what happens is anytime that people take out leverage, usually you have some sort of correction where a bunch of those people get liquidated and we sort of like remove all that leverage out of the system, and then we can start to build back up again. And we go up and we end up going up more than we were before when that leverage was high. But as we're going up, leverage builds, builds, builds. And then again, at some point, that leverage has to get washed out. And we like sort of keep doing that up until we reach the very top. And then eventually just everyone gets washed out and we go down to a bear market. And so I'll do more pro reports on this to kind of show how this all works. But right now, I mean, we've had a steady incline in prices for the last however many months without a massive pullback. Again, not sure if we get a pullback necessarily, but what I have up on the screen here is the open interest and for Bitcoin, which is basically at the highs we saw in the last cycle. Now, the main differentiator here, so like leverage is definitely high right now is what I'm trying to say. But the difference here is that this chart looks like it's at a high from the last cycle, which it is, but also we're starting from a much higher baseline because the prices of this stuff was higher, right? So this is all based off of the price of the assets themselves. And so whereas before the baseline was like somewhere around, what is it, like 2 to 3 billion. Now our baseline is sitting at like 10 to 12 billion. So going from 10 to 12 up to where we're currently at, which is about 22 billion in open interest, that's not a massive jump compared to going from 1 to 2 billion up to the 24, 25 billion, right? So this isn't like a top signal by any means, but potentially at some point soon, this leverage needs to get washed out. So again, I hate to be the bearish one. So like, I don't know when it's going to come, but just something I'm keeping my eye on. Again, as I've said last week as well, and in the market watch this week, probably not a good time to get leveraged. When everyone is levered, that's not a time you want to get levered. So that's one thing. The other just interesting thing on the timelines of kind of where we're at in the cycle. We talked last week how I think we're still pretty early in the cycle. Not a lot of retail's back. We haven't even hit all-time highs, so like not too concerned. But with those Coinbase earnings, which we're going to talk about, they released their trading volumes and they can break it down into retail trading volumes. And they saw a pretty big increase in Q4. A lot of that, again, comes because the price is up. So the volumes just look bigger. Doesn't mean there's necessarily more people actually trading it. Even if the same people are doing the exact same amount of trades, but the price of the assets are higher, then the volume is going to be higher, of course. But they showed their sort of projections for Q1 based off of when the report came out. And it looks like it's going to be even higher than this, much higher. So it looks like retail's starting to come back in, at least from the trading perspective on Coinbase. So typically, when retail starts to come back, that's when we get to that sort of parabolic phase where we have those crazy ups and downs. It also means, historically anyway, we've got about 12 months left in the bull market, which would put us to, what month are we in right now, Jay? February 2025 is the top. Do I think that that's when it happens? I don't know. I think it's still a bit early to say, but definitely we're seeing the like first signs of, okay, the cycle's here and we're going to about to start going into that parabolic phase. So just something to keep our eye on, but I still think we're very, very early. So I wouldn't be too worried at this point.
Does leverage rhyme with volatility, Kai?
Absolutely. Yeah. So as more and more people come in, especially retail people come into the space, you have more volatility because these are, I mean, like in a bear market, the only people that are holding on are people that are just never going to sell. So it's not super volatile once you're at the bottom of the bear market. And even like on our way up, the last, like, let's say year and a half is just a lot of people that were already in crypto that are just like continuing to buy more. They're starting to see, okay, we're getting out of the bear market. So they're allocating more of their own capital. And so it's not a very volatile market. There's not a lot of leverage yet. So we just sort of steadily grind up, which we did for most of 2023 and even early now. Once retail comes in, institutional FOMO starts to come in, that's when leverage comes. And that means we get very volatile where we shoot up like crazy and then we come down 20, 30, 40%. And we should expect a bunch of those over the next year.
Yeah, it's amazing the excitement of everything that's happening right now and retail coming in. It's very exciting. And I think, you know, the word parabolic gets thrown around a lot. And that's great. Everyone's like, and or even predictions like we only have 12 months left of this bull kind of leads to a little bit of FOMO, which leads to people more likely to do leverage and more likely to jump in. And I mean, these are the type of tweets that get the engagement. So I understand why you write them. But right now in this week, where my head's at, and I'm curious where your head's at, Kai, is, you know, spot and chill, like continue to buy the spot and just be super patient because now is when the FOMO really starts to come. And the more the FOMO comes,
the more we're going to see big ups, but we're going to see some big downs too. And then that's when you make bad decisions. You either get leveraged and you get washed out, or you sell because you're scared of a 20, 30% drop, which isn't that weird.
Yeah. I mean, if you just hold crypto and you just don't sell it, you always come out on top if you're long-term enough. And especially in a cycle like this, it's pretty easy to like buy. I mean, it's not easy, but like if you were around and you understood what was going on, I mean, we've all been buying for the last year and a half. If you just do nothing, no leverage, no DeFi, no staking, no nothing, you just sit here for a little bit. And a month, in a year from now, you sell it, you're going to do extremely well. And you're going to do so much better than most of the traditional finance world. So the biggest thing I can say is just don't fuck this up. Just don't start doing stupid things. I actually was just looking at the tweet here that I have up of the retail trading volume below it. Someone else said actually closer to probably 18 to 22 months, because what they're showing is the global liquidity cycle, which is something I follow a lot and completely agree with. These are the cycles that I have said for a while now is what controls the cycles of crypto. You can see we are in a global liquidity cycle. And so probably this is probably a better indicator of when we hit the top of the cycle. But looking at things like leverage and retail is obviously very important as well.
Kai, I'm glad you can see something from that chart, because that thing just looks like absolute gibberish to me. I don't exactly know what you're seeing, but I'm glad you could see that it's 18 to 20 months left, 22 months left in the global liquidity cycle.
Don't quote me on any of these timeframes.
No, I think those are solid timeframes. Those are solid timeframes. You know what you're talking about. Give yourself some credit. Any final thoughts on the market on the week? What to think about for the week ahead?
Look, I don't like calling pullbacks, because no one really knows when they are going to come. So like, I'm not saying they're going to come this week or tomorrow or something, but like, all I know is 100% we will have a pullback. Now, is it when ETH is at 3K or when ETH gets to 4K? Like, I don't know, which is why like I wouldn't really care too much about this stuff. This stuff matters when we get more to the top of the cycle, right? Right now, when you get a pullback or don't get a pullback, doesn't really matter. We still have so much more room to go. So it's not that big of a deal. Of course, if there's a pullback, that's probably when you want to allocate capital. But also just dollar cost average is fine anyway. If you get it at 3K or at 2,500, not that big of a deal as long as you're selling it up at like 10K. And so I wouldn't worry too much about this stuff. You really need to get more specific and care about timelines and things when we get closer to the top of the cycle. But we're not even at all-time highs yet, so I wouldn't be too concerned.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I think that now is when a lot of people start to mess with their consistent strategy that they've had all year by starting to say, oh, I'm going to wait for the next pullback to do my next DCA, right? Like, I'm going to push my DCA a few weeks. Like, maybe let's say you DCA on the 15th of the month usually, and you skipped it this month because you're like, oh, like everyone's talking about a pullback to coming, and you start to wait for that. And those are the decisions, because maybe it doesn't come for a few months, and now you miss out on a few months of DCA. That's not a good decision. So now's when you will get challenged on the boring investments that you're making. Don't sway, like stick with it. Don't try to catch a falling knife, so to speak, because it's impossible.
Keep it boring. That's a good thing.
Let's move over to our top stories of the week, because if you're doing well in crypto, you're probably going to want to buy some NFTs and fuck up your entire crypto strategy like I did in the last cycle. And if you want to buy some NFTs, you're probably looking at Yuga Labs, which is the biggest NFT company in the space, who made some massive moves this past week. Let me catch you up on what happened with Yuga Labs. So first up, last Friday, so this would be a week ago when you guys were listening to this, Yuga Labs broke the news that they acquired Proof, which includes the Proof Pass, Moonbirds, Oddities, Mythics, and Grails. The key details of the acquisition are it includes all the staff, all the IP, the art portfolio, and most importantly, the treasury of Proof, which is estimated to be worth about $20 to $40 million. Kevin Rose will become an advisor. Kevin Rose is out as the leader of Moonbirds. He'll become an advisor to Yuga. I think he's pretty much out. He's wanted to be out for a while. He's been talking about selling this pretty openly for a few months here. And no surprise, Yuga plans to embed Moonbirds into Other Side and into their ecosystem. Look, big announcement, market response. Moonbirds shot up, which is great for me. I am seriously thinking about selling my Moonbird now. I'm pretty much just waiting. I'm going to sell it any day, I think. Maybe I'll keep it in Ether. Who knows? Maybe I'll.
Jay, do you remember when we did that Moonbirds episode? Remember when we did the Moonbirds episode? I think it was a live Twitter space, and we were like, should Jay sell or keep his Moonbirds? And we came. June of last year. Yeah, and yeah, I think the decision was you should sell. And you were like, I understand that's what the decision is, but I'm not going to do it. What was it out of that point? Do you remember?
It was around what it is now. I don't remember.
Oh, really?
It was around 2 ETH. Like maybe it was like 1.7 or something like that. It's very similar to what it is now. So, but you can go look it up if you feel like it was at a different price and you want to prove me.
I'm going
to
look it up right now while you continue.
I'm like just be remembering that to like make myself feel better. So that all happened. Oh, and the one more thing on this was the exact details of this deal were not disclosed, but it was disclosed that this was a share deal. So what that means is Yuga purchased Moonbirds for shares of within Yuga, which means they didn't put any cash up front for this deal, which is a big deal for them because that means they're acquiring Moonbirds' $20 to $40 million treasury without putting any cash up front right now, which as we're coming out of this bear market, and it's no everybody knows Yuga's been struggling for revenue through this bear market because royalties were their number one revenue. And yes, they still make royalties, but not nearly as much in the past year. So getting $20 to $40 million come into your business is pretty nice right now, which is probably one of the biggest parts of this deal, to be honest. Then the news didn't stop there for Yuga. On Wednesday, Garga announced that he was coming back as CEO of Yuga and taking back over the reins from Daniel Alegre. So Daniel Alegre is out as the CEO. I'm not clear on whether he's staying involved in any way or whether he's completely out. But Garga, who is the original founder, one of the original founders, there's two founders of Yuga Labs, he is back in as CEO. And we'll talk a little bit about that announcement and what he spoke about there. But before I go on, Kai, what do you think about all this news out of Yuga Labs?
Well, I mean, there's just so much at Yuga, and let's dive into it. But first, let's walk through who Garga is and who Daniel was, or I guess still is. But so Daniel was a previous, I'm not sure if he was the CEO or something of Activision. And
he was
like
the COO and president of Activision previously.
Of Activision. So a massive, massive gaming company. He's like highly, highly educated, unbelievable resume in the world of gaming, in the world of tech, et cetera, and running companies. Garga, though, was he anyone before Yuga?
No, Garga's I think he's an artist, to be honest. Like, I don't think this is his first big thing.
Right. Which, like, look, I do think that founder-led companies tends to be the best thing for a company. As soon as you go and you get too corporate and you just get some corporate guy to run your company or girl, it tends to water things down. We see that in the tech world a lot. The longer that a founder can stick with the company, usually the better they do. I don't know who this Garga guy is, if he's a beast or not a beast. Like, I don't really have much to say on that. What I think Yuga needs is some sort of direction and focus. They've got so much going on. Like, we can kind of cover some of it. Like, Yuga Labs started with the launch of, you know, Board It Yacht Club, and they have Mutant Ape Yacht Club, and that sort of like series of NFTs, which did really, really well, became one of the biggest in the entire space back in 2022, I think is when they had their like biggest time. But 2021 as well. Then they also launched Other Ship, Other Deeds.
Other Deeds, which gets you into Other Side.
Other Ship is a ice bath place in Toronto that Jay and I have gone to a bunch. So kudos to them. Shout out to them, but not what we're talking about here. So Other Side, which, I mean, they raised a ton of capital on for that. And there's how many NFTs are that? 100,000?
100,000.
100,000 of these other, which is their, basically this is the like land in their big metaverse that they're going to build. And then what else they have? They acquired CryptoPunks and Meebits last year. Now they've got Moonbirds and Proof. They have a team of like over 500 people, as far as they know. This is now even bigger with the purchase of Proof. And yet, I mean, they have revenue. Like you said, they still have some royalties. They do own a shit ton of assets. But there's just no direction on like where they're going next. And at least Garga did put out some direction of where they're going to go. Do you want to sort of walk us through what that is, Jay?
Yeah, let me first talk just a little bit about Proof and Moonbirds, and then I'll lead into, because Garga talked about why they acquired that. My main takeaway on this is that they acquired Proof and Moonbirds for the money and because Kevin Rose wanted out, and I think they got Moonbirds super cheap. And for the team, we all know it's hard to find good people, and Proof team is very well respected within the space. Now, the one thing that Garga did say that sort of caught my attention about this is he said that he thinks CC0 was a mistake for Moonbirds. Mm. That was very interesting. Basically, he says, we have a bunch of thoughts
on that and what that might mean going forward. Too early to say, but it's something I'd love for us to solve in order for the Moonbird ecosystem to reach its potential. So I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if they can go back. As far as I know, you can't go back. Like once you go CC0, you can't go backwards, but maybe they can, or maybe he has another idea to solve this and to get IP rights back. So who knows, but sounds like from his perspective, they got more talent and they got a nice treasury, which is obviously helpful. Now, to talk about his thoughts on Yuga as a whole, he sort of broke down his thoughts into a few different categories. So let me bring up each category and then Kai, you can jump in. First, he talked about Bored Ape Yacht Club and the importance of Bored Ape Yacht Club within the Yuga ecosystem. As you said, Kai, with so many different NFT collections, so many brands, Bored Ape Yacht Club kind of feels like they've gone forgotten, even though they're the main asset here. And so the way they're dealing with that is they started a regular board meeting, as in B-O-R-E-D, this past weekend. 700 ape holders, this token gated, 700 ape holders showed up to that meeting. And they talk about basically how the network of Bored Ape Yacht Club is the most important part, and they want to flourish that network and allow people to come together more. That's why Ape Fest is so cool. And the way they're going to do this is they're actually not spinning out, but they're creating a subsidiary for Bored Ape Yacht Club. So it's going to be its own LLC that's going to exist underneath Yuga Labs, and it's going to have its own team that focuses on it. So we'll see where that leads for Bored Ape. Clearly, they understand network is important. And IP is important, and they have Made by Apes, their IP, their product that allows you to use the IP of your ape and put it on a water bottle or a beer can or whatever. Then he talked about Other Side. He said his goal for Other Side is it should be the living room of Web3, the default place you go in order to play and hang with your community, no matter what community that is. And then he says this is a massive swing for the fences, and I think this is what we've all known from the beginning, like, can Yuga achieve this goal of creating the living room for Web3? Like the place where, imagine you didn't start when you logged onto the internet, you didn't start in a browser in Chrome. You actually started in the metaverse, in the Yuga Labs metaverse, Other Side. And then from there, you surf the net and you buy things and you talk to your friends. Like that's what Yuga's trying to achieve here. Is that possible? Who the frick? I have no idea. That's like such a massive moonshot goal. So we'll see. And then the last thing he talks about is he talks about gaming and where does gaming fit in for them. And basically he says gaming needs to focus on two things. One is it needs to be able to go to the masses. So we need to build games that are simple and fun and anybody can get involved with, so we can onboard millions. He thinks games are top of funnel. Let's get people into the ecosystem by playing a casual game first. And he obviously talks about Dookie Dash because that's their big game right now that they're focused on. And then he also talks about how they really need to be more crypto native. And I think that's one thing that they realized they lost with Daniel Alegre, is that feeling of being a crypto native community, really leaning into, I mean, that's really what Bored Ape Yacht Club has been from the beginning. When you have founders like Garga and Wiley, like these guys are, they're hardcore crypto natives that were here early on. And so he wants them to not lose that part of who they are as they continue forward.
Yeah, look, either Yuga is run by a bunch of people who just have a bunch of assets but have no idea what the heck they're doing, or they have this like mega plan that none of us can wrap our heads around and they're extremely smart. I honestly have no idea, but there is no in between. They're either just a bunch of rich people or people that lucked out and have a bunch of money and like have no idea what they're doing, or like they're extremely smart. And honestly, I don't know. Here's my thoughts, is like they're trying to tackle three massive, like brand new innovative industries all in one, right? It's like they want to build a metaverse. And so they've got a whole team focused on that. They're trying to be the Roblox of Web3. That's freaking hard. Even Roblox is struggling and it's so hard to build what they're building. And these guys are trying to build it for a smaller audience and start from scratch. And like Roblox spends billions and billions to do what they're doing. Can Other Side do that with, like, I know they have a lot of money, but not a lot of money compared to what something like Roblox has. So like, can they do that? I don't know. Then all of a sudden they're now in gaming and they want to like build a bunch of games. Like if you're going to build a bunch of games, that's probably should be the only focus of your business. How are you trying to build a bunch of games and then also try to build this like metaverse Roblox type thing? That's a lot. And then at the same time, they're trying to run seven different NFT projects, which again is a thing that like There is no written playbook for it. If they were just like, I don't know, selling, like doing some sort of e-commerce business that people have done for years and years and years, okay, that's not that difficult. Go do it. You could do that and replicate it a million times with each project, but that's not the case here. There is no playbook for any of these. And so like they're trying to succeed with like, I don't know, what is it, 7 or 8 different NFT projects that there is no playbook for. Then they're trying to build a metaverse. Then they're trying to build a bunch of games. Like, I don't know, man. Like I said, they're either going to knock it out of the park or they have no idea what they're doing.
Well, and it's super interesting you bring up playbook, because the easy thing to do is to compare them to Pudgy Penguins at this point. They're Pudgy Penguins and Bored Ape Yacht Club are neck and neck, right around 20 ETH as the leading NFTs in the market. And Pudgy, on the other hand, unlike Bored Ape Yacht Club, Pudgy is using a very well-defined playbook to build their business. They're building their business based upon an IP playbook that Luka Netz has done twice before. Twice before, he's built a toy business to 8 or 9 figures. So very interesting to consider. Basically, it's like investing in Yuga. And I mean, you're not investing in Yuga if you buy one of their NFTs. Let's be clear. You're investing in the NFT, which is a whole other thing. But that is like, it's taking a big moonshot. Very risky. Pudgy feels much more like, I don't know, like the stable company that, yeah, it's a startup, but a much more predictable investment to me. Not financial advice.
I don't know. This one's, it's one of those ones where I just don't know. I'm not placing any bets on any of those. But we'll just see where I'm rooting for them. I would love for you to do something cool, because this is a Web3 native company. And so it'd be great for them to do something really big. But I don't know. I'm glad I'm not a part of that company right now.
If you want to learn some fun stuff about Yuga, you should go back and read. I wrote a pro report about them a few months ago, focused on the number of millionaires that were created during the last bull run as a result of Yuga NFTs. It was over 300 millionaires were created from investing in Yuga NFTs. So it's a fun read if you want to look on chain.
There is one thing I think of Yuga that they could, there's a chance that could do really well. So like, they own a ton of assets. And if the NFT bull market comes back, which we're going to talk about in a second, and we can figure out a way to make sure that royalties remain on chain, which Magic Eden is launching their NFT marketplace in partnership with Yuga. I think it's next week.
Yeah.
They're supposed to do something with royalties. We don't know what. But if that happens, where we get a marketplace that is using royalties and people actually use it, and these NFTs all start to go up again, and Bored Ape Yacht Club does well, and Mutant Ape and Moonbird and Proof, et cetera, similar to how it went last cycle, then they will print money on royalties, without a doubt. I'm not 100% sure. I do think we have an NFT bull market again, just to get clear. I just don't know that it happens the same as last cycle. So will these ones pump? Will they get royalties at the extent of which they did last time? That I'm not sure. If they do pump, though, they hold a ton of them in their treasury that they could sell. So like, they do have a lot of potential to make ridiculous amounts of revenue if things come back.
Yeah. Yeah, great point. You know who both of us do have a lot of conviction in is Coinbase. Kai, what happened with Coinbase this week?
Yeah, Coinbase dropped their earnings of Q4 earnings plus their just sort of breakdown of everything from 2023. And it absolutely destroyed all of Wall Street's expectations. I mean, it pumped in price, number one, but I think the smart money, or I wouldn't even call these guys smart money anymore when we're talking about crypto Web3, but like the TradFi money was just like, they were so clueless on what was going on. I'm going to go through a bunch of the numbers of what happened with Coinbase, but the big reason why they were so far off in terms of analysts is they're looking at Coinbase over the last year, year and a half, and its numbers, and they're not quite factoring in what happens when a bull market comes back, which we've had early stages of in Q4, and then of course this year as well. And so I think that the analysts just aren't really projecting at that. They're projecting based off the lowest of the low numbers. And so Coinbase just absolutely crushed it. Here's some of the high-level numbers just to give an idea. So first, the revenue for Q4 2023 hit $953.8 million. The estimates, $826 million. So they smashed it by more than $130 million. So that's wild. Their revenues for 2023 were $3.1 billion, which was similar to 2022, which was $3.2 billion. However, the difference here is that this year, or 2023, they were $95 million in profit, whereas in 2022, they were $2.6 billion at a loss. So the difference is massive. And the reason for this, what they did is they were able to ship a bunch of products, right? Base, their derivatives exchange or platform that they put out, and then their subscription service with Coinbase One, I believe it's called. So they launched a bunch of new products, but they did it with 25% less staff, because remember, they had the big layoffs that they had last year. So they were able to save a ton on expenses. I think they reduced their operating expenses by about 45%. So almost cutting it in half, which is insane. And then increasing revenues at the same time, but also just getting more revenues from so many different products. A lot of their revenues were coming just from basically the interest rates. So interest rates are high. They hold a bunch of USDC, and so they can get the interest from that. So that was a lot of their revenue in 2022 and early 2023. But their subscription revenue went up 78% to $1.4 billion from last year. Their USDC obviously still did well because rates are still high. But they also launched Base, which now they made some revenue from. It's not a massive amount, but they accumulated $600 million in value locked on top of Base, which was a surprise, I think, to most people because it launched in August. So like in a few months, pretty crazy. And then also they stake ETH and they make a shit ton of money off of staking their ETH. And if that's not enough, all the Bitcoin ETFs that were approved, there was 11 of them, Coinbase custodies 8 of those 11 and like 90 something percent of all the assets under management. So again, not making a ton of money from that, but a decent amount. And then the Ethereum ETFs that are coming in a few months, Coinbase will be the main custodian for those as well. Potential for more staking revenue from that. So Coinbase is just an absolute beast. And most non-crypto people did not see it coming.
Man, it's just incredible. Now, obviously, Wall Street readjusted their projections for Coinbase. I think it went from like 140 to 240. Is that the jump that it
made? Some of them. And even JP Morgan, though, was still saying it was a sell and it should be like $80 or something like that. Something ridiculous. I was like, wow, they have no idea what they're talking about. Like at the early stages of a bull cycle and these guys are executing at this high of a level. Oh my God. I couldn't be more bullish on Coinbase right now.
Well, and that's not even to mention Coinbase Ventures, which is their investment arm of Coinbase, right? Which basically has a portfolio of early stage startups, companies within crypto that they've invested in. And it was noted that this was worth $1 billion on their, on a previous call, I think. And then it came out in this earnings call that it was actually the cost price was $1 billion, not the actual value. So they go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so what that means is Coinbase Ventures is like an investment firm, right? So they invested in a bunch of startups. And so they invested, I don't think it was a full billion, but something, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. And so what they're valuing that portfolio at, because these are private markets, is just how much they invested. They're not valuing it at how much that thing could potentially be worth. And so like some of the examples of the investments that they put in, Celestia is probably the best performing asset that has this year, right? This thing has gone nuts over the last couple months. Arbitrum, DYDX, like the list of companies that they have invested in and how well these companies have done over the last 6 months, this could be worth 50x what they are saying it is in the earnings calls. So that's a massive little underlying thing that I think probably the market, like the TradFi market, just doesn't understand.
And then we also found out how much of Circle does Coinbase own?
Yeah, Coinbase owns somewhere around 3.5%. I don't know that's fully confirmed, but I think it was 3.5%. And what's huge about that is Circle is IPOing this year. And so again, when that IPOs, we'll see what they are valued at. But Coinbase owns 3.5% of that. So Coinbase, just on all levels, in terms of the revenue they're bringing in terms of the amount of treasury they have, I forget, they were in the billions for how much money they hold. In terms of just like having their hand in everything that's going on in the TradFi world for crypto, now also in the on-chain world, and then also, you know, owning a piece of some of the only other crypto company that's going to go public in the US so far. It's just, these guys are just nailing it on all levels.
So if you can't tell, not financial advice, but both Kai and I are very bullish on Coinbase and very excited.
And they put their earnings. Yeah, they put their earnings report on chain too. So you can mint their earnings report, which I would recommend everyone do because, again, at some point, Coinbase is going to launch a token. I don't know when that's going to be. It could be years and years and years from now. But anyone who is getting involved in these early things, like the NFTs they had for Base when it first launched, something like this, the first ever earnings report to be put on chain, I don't know. I'm assuming something's coming our way in due time.
Well, what was interesting about this mint, because they've done, as you said, a bunch of open edition mints to celebrate launches and various steps and milestones that they've hit. And this one is soulbound, whereas in the past, a lot of theirs have not been soulbound. So this being soulbound would indicate even further that they might be considering using this as a potential point within a future airdrop. Over 378,000 people have already minted this earnings report. We'll put the link in the show notes so you guys can make sure you guys get there safely and do this free mint.
378,000 wallets, not people. I would imagine there are people farming the hell out of that earnings report, which is hilarious and never something I never thought I would say, but that's definitely what's happening there.
All right, let's go from Coinbase to the NFT market, which is having a little bit of a moment right now. And it was all set off this week when someone spent $4.5 million to acquire a set of 10 autoglyphs. What are autoglyphs? Autoglyphs are the first on-chain generative art on Ethereum. And generative art is really seen to be a provenance of the beginning of a new movement on chain that people believe will be sort of like the Mona Lisa 100 years from now. And as a result, autoglyphs have incredible value. And that's why somebody bought 10 of them for $4.5 million. The person who purchased them just 3 years ago for $1.4 million and
wow,
then flipped them 3 years later for a nice 10x approximately. So shout out to that person. Really exciting to see this type of buy. We talked last week about EtherRock selling. There was an EtherRock that sold for $750,000. There is some big buys happening in the NFT market. Look, the NFT market is still not in a bull cycle. It's still not back. But usually when you start to see these types of large purchases, it's because there's some big investors who can see that an NFT bull market might be coming and they want to front that and get in early.
And this was one of the biggest, Jay? Or what was that?
We had some fun. Let's look at the list of the top NFT purchases of all time. Here's the list I got up on screen here. The first is The Merge, which is actually an NFT that, Kai, you and I had never heard about when we were researching this. This was an NFT that was one NFT that got fractionalized, but basically that one NFT, if you fractionalize it across, it was like 30,000 people who bought this. It was $91 million for that. Beeple's every day was $69 million. We all know that. And then Beeple has another one in the top five, and there's a few CryptoPunks in the top five, one for $23 million, one for $11 million. So there's some big buys that have happened. Now, these are all in the past. So the fact that we're now seeing this autoglyph purchase for $14 million, now you're buying 10 NFTs for $14 million. But I would say, yeah, these are the interesting signals to be keeping an eye on if you think there's an NFT cycle you want to be paying attention to.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, the NFT cycle is coming. And I mean, obviously, it was better to be buying a few months ago because I think we put in the low a couple months ago. But we're still pretty low with a lot of these. Obviously, something like Pungy Penguins is sort of leading the market, kind of like Solana led the market last year in the mid to end of 2023, and maybe Bitcoin, I guess, as well. And so I think the NFT market's coming back. A lot of this, I'm just unsure if it comes back the same as it was last time. Usually each cycle, there's a lot of things that rhyme, but they don't repeat exactly, right? So I don't have enough insight to say which one specifically are going to come back. I'm not fully invested, or I'm barely invested at all in NFTs. I don't know it enough.
Well, and I think the tough thing is NFT liquidity is so fragmented right now because you have NFTs across so many different chains, and you also have so many NFTs from the last cycle, which have the brand recognition. But have they really created a successful business? That would be the main thing I would be looking at, is like, don't look at their price action. Look at what have they done to make a business and create revenue. But then you also have all these new NFTs that are going to come out in this coming cycle, and they're going to be more hyped in a lot of ways because they're new, and new gets exciting and new attention. It's why restaurants rebrand every 5 years just to be new. So it's very difficult to predict NFTs. Another thing that's going on in the NFT market this week, which is another sort of signal to me that it could be the early stages of a cycle for NFTs, is over at NBA Top Shot. There is a moment happening over there where one type of packs are selling for 7x what the original price was within 2 weeks. So you buy these packs for $250 and you can turn around and sell them for $1,700 within 2 weeks. That's frothy to me. I shouldn't say that's frothy. That's very speculative on something that we all know NBA Top Shots was early in, I mean, really started the NFT bull cycle the first time around. So here we go again, another signal that, okay, people are, these aren't NBA fans that are buying these packs and then, you know, buying them at 7x the value. No, these are all degens that are trading and there's a tension over there. So that, and that's degens trading is what causes the NFT cycle to really go. So
these mini bull markets happen in these different sectors and then eventually it all kind of comes together. So things are popping off.
Well, and then the last thing we saw was for a brief moment, Pudgy flipped Bored Ape Yacht Club this week. Only for a brief moment. It's not there anymore. If I look at the prices right now, Bored Ape is at 22.2 floor and Pudgy is at 19.5. So I actually got a little bit more distance between them now. Mm-hmm. But at one point this week, Pudgy was at 22.9 and Bored Ape Yacht Club was at 22.6. So we saw that moment, that flip for a moment. And then in the same week, Pudgy also announced that they're back in Walmart again. Walmart has reordered Pudgy Penguin toys. Kai, I actually got some right here. I don't know if you can see this little guy. I'm holding up on.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Andy, one of our community members, sent me some Pudgy Penguin toys, and they're pretty dope. Pudgy Penguin toys are in 3,100 Walmarts for, I don't know how long they're going to be there for as part of this order, but that's exciting news too. So yeah, lots of stuff happening over the NFT market.
Pudgy, man, just continues to crush it. Who would have thought?
Okay, let's go to WorldCoin was pumping this week, Kai. What happened over here?
Yeah, I think WorldCoin has pumped mainly because Sam Altman is getting back in the news. He's raising, what, $7 trillion of capital to, I don't know, to do his next project, which is to compete with NVIDIA, basically. That guy's just got a lot going. But obviously, Sam Altman is also the co-founder of WorldCoin. So it's sort of like the degen, the crypto native's way of betting on Sam Altman is to just buy WorldCoin, I guess. And so WorldCoin has just gone absolutely nuts since all that have happened. The one thing I would say with WorldCoin is the market cap is not so high. But if you zoom in and look at the numbers a little bit further, like what is the market cap here? It's about $1 billion. So nothing too crazy. But if you look at the FDV, which is the fully diluted market cap, okay, so the fully diluted valuation, it is 76.7 billion dollars. It is the fourth highest valued token that exists, which is insane and makes no sense. I guess one thing is WorldCoin now has 3.5 million verified active users, and these are real humans because the only way you can get verified is by proving that you're an actual legit human. So not many other applications on chain can do that. Everyone else is just wallets, not users. So like, it is one of the largest apps, which is quite interesting. There's not a lot you can do on it other than sign up, get verified, get a bunch of, well, not a bunch, but get some WorldCoin tokens, which most people are likely selling. And then it's just a wallet after that. So there's not much to do. There is a bunch that could come to it. Is it worth a valuation of $76 billion? I don't know. That's a bit crazy. I don't think most people even realize that. I don't think a lot of people in this space look at FDV. The reason why that's so high, for those of you that just aren't quite sure, is the amount of tokens that are on in the circulating supply right now versus the total supply of tokens is 1/76th of all the tokens is actually in the circulating supply. 1/76th. So it is a fraction, like a small amount of tokens that are available on the circulating supply. The rest of it is being held by the WorldCoin team. It is meant to be airdropped out to those who are getting verified. It is meant for investors. And so this is sort of like a, I don't know if they're doing it, so I don't want to put words in their mouth, but it's kind of a thing that scammy projects do where they hold back a lot of tokens so that their FTV looks really high and it allows them to just like get a better sort of valuation and look like they're bigger than they are because most of the tokens just can't be sold. And that's what WorldCoin's doing. Now, whether they're doing it for that reason or just because that's their plan and how they want to do it, I don't know. I don't want to say anything specific on that, but that valuation is absolutely nuts, especially considering the only point of the token right now is to just incentivize people to sign up and then pay them weekly in that token for no reason. So anything can happen in a bull market, but in a bear market, you don't want to be caught holding a token that has an FTV like that.
Yeah, this is an important number that kind of comes up a few times in today's episode. I want to jump into airdrop them like it's hot. But our first story here, we're also going to talk about their fully diluted value. Kai, Starknet, their claims opened up this week. Bring us up to speed.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about this last week, so we'll keep it short. But you can now claim your Stark tokens if you are eligible to do so. That began on the 20th, I believe. So far, 508,000 wallets have claimed, which is about 48% of all the wallets. And I think about 70% of all, 74% close to now, of all the tokens are now claimed. There's still about, so 432 million tokens have been claimed. I'm not sure what they're doing with the ones that aren't claimed. I think they're redistributing them. So people might be getting more tokens, or they may burn them. I'm not exactly sure that's going to work. But interestingly, again, we talked about this last week. There's a lot of noise around their distribution. They're distributing just a small amount of their tokens as well. So when the token dropped, we got to see the price as well as the market caps of it. And the FTV of Starknet, when it launched anyway, was $30 billion, which is way bigger than Arbitrum and Optimism. Arbitrum around $20 billion, Optimism around $17 billion, Starknet and Polygon $10 billion, right? Starknet has gone down since then. But to be valued much higher than Arbitrum and Optimism doesn't really make a lot of sense. Also considering after they launched, the Starknet active addresses went down from like 250,000 to like 50,000 or below. And so basically all the farmers were like, okay, we're done here and we're going to move on to the next thing. So how sticky is their community? It doesn't seem to be very. Still think Starknet's doing some really good things. Their tech is amazing. So I have high hopes for them, but should they be valued more than Arbitrum and Optimism right now? Probably not.
Yes, it's interesting because we have two projects here, which when you see a high fully diluted value, often, as you said, Kai, it comes from a scammy project who's trying to inflate their numbers by only releasing a small percentage of their tokens to begin with. But I believe in both WorldCoin and Starknet. Both are very well respected teams. I don't think either are scammy. I don't get that feeling at all. So it's interesting to see two projects that have done this in the same week. We'll see where this lands. And this might be a new playbook that they're experimenting with, but it also could be dangerous. So be careful with your investments in both of those.
WorldCoin didn't just recently launch, so that wasn't this week. They've been around for a long time. But Starknet is the one that's done this for sure.
Hey, let's go to OP, who airdropped 10 million OP tokens this week in their fourth airdrop. This was valued at $40 million and is going to 23,000 wallet addresses. And what was really cool about this was who this airdrop was for. This was focused on airdropping to creators. OP said that they value creators. They think creators are a really important part of Web3 and on-chain activity. And so they wanted to reward creators on OP and on Ethereum. So for any user who created what they're calling an engaging NFT, and they have some information about what is an engaging NFT. It has to have been purchased and have a certain amount of buy sells around it. But if you created a engaging NFT on either Ethereum mainnet or on Optimism Superchain between January 10th, 2023 to January 10th, 2024, then you are eligible right now to claim rewards. We'll put the link in the show notes. You should go. Anybody who's created an NFT should just go check to see if you're eligible to claim some of these OP tokens.
Yeah, interesting. They base it off of how much gas fees were paid to mint or transfer your NFT. So, which is interesting because that's how Optimism makes its revenue. So they're basically saying, hey, those that are generating revenue for Optimism, we're going to reward you. Really, really cool. I absolutely love that. If you think about how this, because you think of NFTs as creators, right? Similar to creators that are on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, et cetera, who give next to no money to their creators. And Optimism saying, hey, you didn't even ask for anything. You didn't even know. We're just surprising you with many of these people got thousands and thousands of dollars for helping them create on their platform. Really, really interesting. Love that blockchain enables people to do this. Also, just to go back to the FTV thing, holding back tokens isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like Starknet has plenty of tokens to now do things like this. So maybe we're just witnessing something that's just very different. Optimism's done an incredible job at retroactively rewarding people and saving tokens to give value back to the community. Maybe that's what Starknet, that is what WorldCoin's technically doing. So like there are reasons for it. That's why I say it's not necessarily a scammy thing. It's just a little weird scenario that we're not really used to, and we'll see how this plays out.
Okay, next up, another airdrop that we've talked a lot about is EigenLayer, which is upcoming. And what we're seeing right now that's very interesting is a points trading market for EigenLayer points.
Kai, what is the current value of EigenLayer points in the points trading market?
Yeah, so you can go to Whales Market. It's whales.market, and there's a new predictions market, basically. Well, it's not even predictions. It's actually you can trade your points. And so you can kind of get an idea of what the market is expecting the price of these points to be or what they're worth. Currently, so we have a tweet up, and this was just from a couple days ago, and the points were sitting at about 15 cents per point, okay? Which, I mean, that's pretty cool. If you've got thousands of points, you're making some pretty good money there. I was pretty happy to see those numbers. But then yesterday, EigenLayer announced that they received an investment from A16Z, which is Andreessen Horowitz, and they received an investment for $100 million, which is pretty massive. And so just in the last day, these points are now worth, I'm looking at up on the screen here, anywhere from 25 cents to 32 cents. Actually, here's one at 37 cents. So the numbers of these points are going up big time, which I absolutely love to see. And I mean, we've been promoting EigenLayer airdrop for a long time. So many listeners are probably should be already doing this. Your points, we can already start to see now. I think they're still months away from launching this token. Their mainnet, from what I saw on a podcast yesterday, they said that their mainnet is probably launching early Q2. And then we don't know points yet, but I would assume, or when the token gets launched, but I would assume it's at some point after that.
All right. Let's go from airdrops to agree, disagree, our favorite segment of the week. First up, we got an agree, disagree from our man, Kyle himself. Let me read this to you, Kai, and then maybe you can explain this one since it would be weird to disagree with your own tweet. You said, I know everyone thinks crypto UX sucks, but have you ever tried using a bank? At least I can get a wallet and take out a loan in crypto from my couch. I take signing a transaction twice, bridging over, going and bridging versus going into a physical location and signing 100 papers any day. Crypto is a 10x improvement already, and we still have a ways to go on that.
Yeah, I said this because, and it got some decent engagement, because people always say that crypto UX sucks and no one's ever going to use it. And every time I do anything with TradFi, like, I mean, if I have to use a bank for anything, it's terrible. When I have to exchange currencies, it's terrible and expensive. When I have to get a mortgage, that was the worst experience of my life. I regret ever buying a home just because of what I had to deal with. It's terrible. Even like when I want to fund I use Questrade in Canada, but this would be like your Schwab account, whatever, your investing account. Even that, I send money there. It takes like 3 days for it to get in. I can only buy and sell my assets from like 9 o'clock until 4 o'clock. And then I can't do anything with my assets in between then. I can't exchange my like Tesla stock for my Bitcoin ETF. I've got to sell it, pay the fee for that into Canadian dollars. And then I've got to go and buy and pay the fee for that, right? I can't move my Tesla stock to somewhere else. It's stuck in there. Like everything about the TradFi system sucks, but we're just used to it because that's the norm. But it takes forever. It's expensive. You've got to go and like upload your like electricity bill to get approved to have a bank, or like it's ridiculous the things you have to do, yet everyone does them. And then I think about how easy it is. My girlfriend actually set up a Bitcoin wallet yesterday, or no, might have been this morning. It took 5 seconds. We got a Magic Eden wallet, which I've never even used, so I didn't know the UX of it. But literally, you just download to your Chrome and boom, you have it. She sent the address to someone that was going to send us some Bitcoin, and away you go. It took 5 seconds from our couch. And I was just like, man, imagine that we had to go to a bank and open that up. Especially, I mean, we couldn't because we're in Brazil right now, right? And so like that UX is unbelievable. And I just think people are missing that point. And then you add on all the other things of the programmability and the DeFi that comes along with that, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, man, that UX is already 10x better, but even more so, it's even more than 10x better because a billion people in the world don't even have access to a bank.
They're like 3 billion. 3 billion people.
Yeah, 3 billion people in the world don't even have access to a bank. And yet you can go and in 5 seconds, you have access to a new version of a bank. So like, look, we're going to improve a lot of the UX, but man, what we've already accomplished with crypto is just unbelievable. And people still are fading that, which is wild to me.
I got nothing but a nodding head to agree with that. Great, great take, Kai. Okay, next up, we've got the DeFi Edge who says, fundamentals don't matter that much in a bull market, unfortunately. You're far better off trying to understand herd mentality, market sentiment, and pumpamentals if you want to make it.
You know what? When we did our run through yesterday with the community, I agreed. I actually disagree. And the only reason I disagree is, so it is true. Fundamentals in bull markets don't matter. And so like, if you want to catch the tokens that will pump, it's not about fundamentals. It's about narratives. It's about herd mentality. It is those things. However, if you want to make it, trying to invest based off herd mentality and sentiment and narrative and fundamentals, most people will get wrecked unless you are full-time. And most people listening on this podcast have legit jobs and are doing legit things, and you are not doing this full-time. And so I actually disagree. If you want to make it, buy the things that have fundamentals and just hold on to them and don't do anything else. So I disagree.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Because you're right. Like, fundamentals don't matter in a bull market if you make them not matter to your strategy by trying to chase all these other things that are very hard to predict. So don't make that mistake. Stick with the fundamentals.
Most people are going to invest in the things that have already pumped, right? It's hard to be way ahead of everyone else. And also, most people are not going to know when the top comes. And if you're holding any of these shit things that have value because of narratives and fundamentals, those things drop 20-30% in a day. Things with fundamentals don't do that, right? They still go down, but nowhere near as much as those. So you at least have time to get out. And most people, they don't realize that. So I actually think you want to stick with the things with fundamentals.
Well, and here's the key driver of it all as I go to our next tweet is expectations. And so Eric Bokunas says, it's crazy to me seeing people reply with when moon, when Lambo. He says, huh? IBIT is up 13% in a month. That's double QQQ. And BTC is up 110% in the past year. Is that not considered moon? How high exactly are your expectations? For context, as a 60-40er, I'm happy with 7 to 8% annually.
Okay, so there's a lot of abbreviations. I'm going to just explain a little bit about what he was saying, but I absolutely love this. So IBIT is the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF, which is up 13% a month. QQQ is the NASDAQ tech stocks. What else do we have there? BTC, obviously Bitcoin. 60-40er, this is people that own 60% equities, 40% bonds. Very common investment strategy. That's what most people in the TradFi world do. And most people, when they do that, you get about 7-8% annually. That is sort of like a good return and what's expected long-term if you're continuing to invest in the market. That is really good. And when I first got investing, I was like, okay, if I can get 10%, like I'm smashing the market. Like that's wild. Okay, here we go, 10%. But then when you get in crypto, you realize 10% it happens in a day and it doesn't mean anything, right? Like that, because it's so volatile, like 10% doesn't actually matter. What matters is 20, 30, 40% and more, right? In a weekly basis. But crypto, we're so blessed, I guess, because we get these thousands of percent returns in a cycle, which is just unheard of in any other market. People just don't get that. And so we are, and a lot of people in crypto, this is the first thing they've ever invested in. And so we don't get what it's really like in the other world, which is why we get so greedy and so like bored when, you know, we only go up 10% and we start trying to get into these crazy coins. Whereas if you're someone that comes from the traditional market like Eric, I mean, 110% last year in what is considered a bear market, that's just absolutely unheard of. And so it's a good thing to just like sit back and understand expectations. Pretty funny though.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think expectations are a dangerous thing. And we've talked a lot about the number of people in our community, the number of people who say that they expect 10X. Look, be very careful if you expect 10X, because that's what leads you to chase 100X in order to get 10X. And chasing
100X. To be fair, the 10X isn't that difficult, but you had to buy it during the bear market, right? When the time when no one was buying. And look, if you were around and you were listening to this podcast, you were doing that because we were telling you to do that. And I'm sure that was your goal. 10X is pretty easy there. ETH, Bitcoin, they're all going to go to 10X from the bottoms of this bear market. That's no problem. Trying to get a 10X from like today or from 6 months from now, which is when most people come in, that's when that shit gets really hard.
Okay, next up we have Zeneca. He says, pretty sure this cycle's NFT bull run will be on the back of protocols airdropping tokens to communities. We'll create a speculative mania bubble and prices will get ridiculous and then it'll come crashing down. The circle of crypto life.
This was a great take and I actually completely agree. I had not thought of this either, although it was right there in front of us. What is one of the things we've seen over the last maybe 2 months recently that we did not see before is NFT communities getting airdrops, right? We've seen Pudgy Penguins get a few. We've seen, I think, Sappy Seals and like a few others from different airdrops recently. We had never seen that before. Before it was users of L2s, users of different chains, but we had never seen NFT communities, and that is starting to pick up steam. And I think that actually does continue. And once people wrap their heads around that, like what Zeneca's saying is, well, then everyone's going to want to go and buy NFTs so they can get airdrops. Just like what we saw with Cosmos, Injective and TIA, Celestia, over the last couple of months, there has been just an insane bull market in those two tokens because everyone's buying them, staking to farm airdrops. Well, what do we think is going to happen when people go, oh, if I just buy Pudgies or X NFT, then I can farm some airdrops too? People made some unbelievable money from Pudgy Penguins. Same thing with Solana Phone, right? People bought the Solana Phone because they knew they could farm airdrops and made a bunch of money from it. I could see this happening with NFTs. That's going to be very interesting to watch and play out. Now, how they do it, I'm not sure. What is interesting is like you can use on-chain analytics platforms to like look at the holders of, let's say, Pudgy Penguins and see, are they high earners? Do they have a lot of capital on-chain? Do they trade a lot? Are they very active? But protocols can start to find their specific niche based off this, see who's active, who spends a lot, et cetera, on what chains, and then drop to those people and boom, you get a bunch of users right off the bat. I could definitely see this playing out. It looks like it's already happening. I don't see why this doesn't gain momentum and continue on further. So really, really interesting. I like this take.
Yeah, Syncus DAO, which is a DeFi protocol, they announced their airdrop this week. And Pudgy Penguins, Bored Ape Yacht Club, Mutant Ape Yacht Club, Sappy Seals, and Wreck Guy are all eligible communities for that. So yeah, we're seeing this. Look, I think this is incredibly speculative investing. If you are purchasing an NFT, which you think might get an airdrop, so you got to get lucky, you got to pick the right NFT, might get an airdrop. You don't even know the value of that airdrop, nor do you even know what the business model of that airdrop might be, and if they can sustain that, the value through good tokenomics. So agree with the take, but do not speculate on this type of investment if you ask me.
This is what we call pumpamentals. They work really well in bull markets. They do very bad in the bear markets because no one's dropping tokens in bear markets. So what do you think happens to all those NFTs once all the airdrops stop? Same with TIA, same with Injective, et cetera. Now, it does bring a bunch of revenue to those companies and it appreciates their tokens. So maybe they can then build something of value. So like it's a smart idea. I'm not saying don't do it. And you can definitely make a lot of money from it. Just be careful when the bear market comes.
Okay, next up. This is a great take. I really like this. This is from Deebs DeFi. They say, I don't care how many top signals you watch. If you wait for the moment, you're going to miss it. I'm not ashamed to say I've already taken profits on several positions. Number one, hit a 2x. Number two, sold my initial investment. Number three, let the earnings ride. A simple but effective strategy that I employ to stay in the green. The bird is not going to round trip this year.
Look, in my investing masterclass that we launched, last year, I do give a similar strategy to this where you take your initial investment out at a certain however many X and let the rest ride. I would say, though, it depends on the tokens you're investing in. So first of all, we're still very early in the cycle. So I don't think like taking a 2X on ETH here or like IMX or OP or any of these like really strong tokens that you pretty well know are going to do well during the cycle, I don't think that's a good idea. I would not be taking profits on a 2X in Ethereum right now, right? Now, if it was WEN token or, you know, Pepe or whatever other meme coin, okay, that makes sense. Although I would say, because those things come and go within a week, right? So like those are so hard to figure out. So if you're going way down the risk curve and you're in, you know, meme tokens, sure, makes sense. If it's the bigs, like the big ones, I wouldn't be doing it there, especially this early in the cycle. Even things like OP and IMX, whatever, which are technically blue chips, but not really at this point. They're still pretty new. I wouldn't be selling at a 2X. Like I haven't sold any of my OP, my IMX, any of that stuff. I will eventually and then let the rest ride, but I don't think that's necessary just yet. So it depends on what risk curve you're in.
That's a great take of that. Appreciate that, Kai. Okay, last one for the week. We've got a photo up on the screen. If you guys are listening, let me describe it for you. It is a photo of Sam Gangman-Fried. That's SBF in prison. This photo was leaked by Tiffany Fong, an independent journalist who has followed Sam closely and has actually become, I think, friends with him, which is how she got access to this photo. So apparently this photo was taken just before Christmas in jail where Sam Bankman-Fried is now. And it's a photo of him with what looks like five different gang members. We actually know all the faces are blocked out except for one face, and that's the person beside him. And Sam looks rough. Like his hair is all disheveled. He's got a beard. He looks like he's lost a ton of weight. He was kind of chunky going into prison when he was in jail. In the courthouse. But now he looks like he's lost a ton of weight. And next to him is G-Lock, who is a former Blood member who was friends with him in jail, but then got out of jail recently. And so Tiffany did a one-on-one sit-down interview with G-Lock where she talks about Sam. And G-Lock describes Sam. First of all, you got to listen to this interview because G-Lock
speaks like an absolute gangster. Like, I can only understand half the words that are coming out of his mouth. But he said that Sam is doing well, and that Sam actually, if this photo was being taken and Sam was, I guess, you know, walking down the hallway or standing nearby, and he was like, "What, you guys aren't getting me in the photo? Like, let me jump in." And so then he jumped in this photo, which is just hilarious because this photo has now become quite infamous. And look, Sam's where he deserves to be based upon what he did. But this photo shows that he might be a little bit afraid of taking a shower and dropping the soap.
Tough go for SBF. Can't believe he's going to miss this entire bowl cycle. I don't feel bad for him, but pretty crazy.
That is a wrap. You know what isn't crazy is tuning into Web3 Academy every week. We appreciate you guys so much. We hope those of you that are headed to ETH Denver next week are excited for all that. Sadly, neither Kyra are going to be there this year, but if you are there, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know what's going on so we can stay in the loop. Also, have yourselves a great weekend and make sure you don't get caught up in the FOMO. Stick with the fundamentals. Don't focus on the pumpamentals. Unless you're investing maybe 1% of your stuff. Sure, take 1%, go pumpamental crazy, try to have some fun. But stick to the fundamentals. As always, we'll see you in our Discord community. Make sure you subscribe to the newsletter so you're up to date. Have yourselves a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and subscribe or follow so that you don't miss the next one. While you're at it, there's a link in the description for our free newsletter where we provide timely and relevant Web3 insights so you can confidently build and invest in Web3. Make sure to subscribe today. One final note. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto and Web3 are risky, and you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and see you in the next one.